This episode is brought to you by the official coffee of the Chromecast podcast, Fresh Roasted Coffee, who we've partnered with to make a special edition Chrome Unboxed anniversary blend. Here at Chrome Unboxed, we're not just nerdy about Chromebooks, we're also coffee snobs. And look, we wasted a lot of time hand roasting coffee before we found Fresh Roasted Coffee, and we haven't looked back since. This coffee is roasted fresh to order, immediately packaged, nitrogen flushed, and shipped directly to your door. And although we can't officially say that this Chrome Unboxed edition tastes any better than the normal anniversary blend, that is the word around town. But don't just take our word for it. Pick up a bag for yourself and let us know what you think. You can grab a bag over at chromeunboxed.com/coffee. Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Chromecast. I am not Joe Humphrey. I'm actually Gabriel Brangers, a.k.a. McTrigger, a.k.a. Smoke Insider. I'm here with Robbie Payne.
What's up, guys?
I will give you top billing because you are the founder.
Hey.
You are the patriarch.
Give me some respect, yeah?
Hey. Patriarch of this family. But I will also give credit where credit is due, and I would like to welcome with us today Andrew Johnson, a.k.a. The General, a.k.a. Andy Cam.
Andy Cam.
Andy Cannon Camera.
Steezy Dreezy.
We still haven't got an explanation from Joe as to what that even means.
It goes right along with that one Viva La Dirt video I showed you all the other
day. It was something
day.
To do with my shoes. So, yeah.
Like, what does that have to do with shoes?
Well, that's Steezy. And
what's
that mean?
What is Steezy?
Yeah, Steezy. You know, it's a thing with the stuff.
Is that like Yeezy?
Maybe. I don't know.
He just plays along.
I saw one of my barbecue guys had what does Joe call his truck? The Yee Yee, right?
He said Yee Yee.
He had a Yee Yee shirt on. I'm like, oh, is that? And it had nothing to do with Toyotas or trucks or anything. It was something complete.
I think
it's a brand. It's like Yee Yee Outdoor or something like that. It's like, we got to get him a shirt.
So Joe is from Meade County and has a tendency. Apparently, everybody there nicknames everything and every person. Like, every person has a nickname and things get nicknamed. Yeah. I had a friend in high school who was also from Meade County who also nicknamed everything. It's he nicknamed stuff. And then he would, like, shorten everybody's name. So, like, I'm not kidding. At one point, I remember just being like, dude, you can't call me. He would call me Ro sometimes.
Ro.
I'm like, Ro. Like,
it's
no,
Kevin
no.
from the office.
Like, I got a lot. Yeah. Why use all words? Wouldn't some words do fine?
Oh, wow.
Also, just to clarify, Steezy is the combination of style and ease, a snowboarder term. So it's like dope, fresh. You know, it's
that sounds
cool.
Like something Joe
like,
would say.
Is it like E-Breeze? E-Breeze from
yeah.
the E-Breeze?
Mm-hmm.
This guy.
Yeah.
They had a run of t-shirts there for a while, I think.
What's that?
The E-Town High School. They had E-Breeze. E-Breeze.
Kiss me on that. I'm an E-Breezy boy.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That sounds like an E-T boy.
Yeah.
That's a good
episode. He sounds like someone that would have
right. yeah,
that sort of apparel.
So, yeah, there you go. In case you're wondering, if you are wondering.
Surely
you're wondering. Yeah, surely you're wondering why I'm sitting in the hot seat today. I guess that would be the hot seat because yeah. I'm the MC, so it's a person being yeah. interviewed.
You're going to say yeah. stuff to me, and I'm going to.
Which
like,
also leads me to another episode of The Office that I watched last night was the marijuana joint found in the.
Oh yeah,
and Jim turns it around on him. That's just
fantastic.
The best. It's the best. Anyway, Joe Humphrey, for those of you who do not know, is an amateur disc golfer. He spent the last year playing tournaments to qualify for the. Is it U.S. or World?
It's Worlds.
It's Worlds.
Yeah.
So it is the US. PDGA, the Pro Disc Golf Association Amateur World Tournament, which is actually, oddly enough, right up the road in Indiana. He qualified.
That's why he qualified or wanted to qualify for this year because it was close.
Right.
He didn't have to go travel a long way away to go play.
But he put in a lot of work last year. He qualified well within the time frame. Like I think he got qualified.
You have to qualify the year before.
Yeah, so he was qualified by September or October.
Yeah,
because
he had like three or four tournaments he still had scheduled to go to, and he went to some, skipped some, and whatever.
Yeah. So today is Thursday, so he, in about an hour and a half, will be teeing off
round four. No, round three. Monday he didn't have a round. Because he said they had practice rounds on Monday.
I don't believe that.
Because I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
That's what it showed on the website, too. That's three.
Today's four. Look it up. Go to PDG.
He's only got two scores posted, didn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's round three.
I just like to argue.
I'm pretty sure today's round three. But, yeah, I think he's got today and tomorrow left.
Yeah, so he is playing the World Amateurs today. Had a killer first round. He's doing well. If you find him on Instagram, you can see some of his first tosses. And what they were throwing into on hole one would make me want to never play this game again. It looks like – it reminded me of the scene from Star Wars where Luke goes into the – to face himself.
Yeah.
It's like this tunnel. It's like there's no end.
Like, that's it?
Yeah.
That's
what you got to throw. You got to throw this. I mean, we have a hard enough time landing a golf ball on a green that's massive, and he's got to throw a frisbee, into like this tiny little hole into the woods. So good on him, because I couldn't do it. It's crazy. So
yeah. So good luck to Joe. Hopefully today and tomorrow go well.
You're quiet, which tells me I'm right. I'm just kidding.
Oh, no, you were wrong.
I know. It's fine. Don't ever say that on air, please.
Don't tell people.
I'm just kidding. You can edit that out. All right, so Chrome OS news. We've got, Steam Deck is right up there. So you guys did some stuff with the Steam Deck today, this week.
Yeah, the video went out as we're doing this podcast. So by the time you guys hear this, a day or so late. But yeah, the video went up. We wanted to do one thing with the Steam Deck before I sold it, because to be fair, I never use it.
So I haven't watched the video yet, but I saw the title when I was scrolling through to get my show notes. Didn't you write a piece kind of similar to this before?
Yeah.
So it's kind of sorta.
I'd said, you know, like the idea of Steam gaming, the fact that Steam Deck is a thing,
right,
and being sold is a good thing for Chrome OS. Once we got it in, started, you know, playing a handful of games. I'm terrible at console games. I'm no good with joysticks anymore. Same. And I just don't play with that stuff any longer. So it was more of a, I'm going to test this, see how the graphics look, see how things move. And honestly, it wasn't until probably the day of the video that I thought, like, oh, God, I probably need to look, make sure, like, the graphics aren't turned down to, like, medium or low.
Right.
Because it's a small screen, so they could probably get away with some of that stuff. But instead, it was Apex Legends, and literally everything was cranked up max. So max quality, max textures, max anti-aliasing, max everything.
Blooming, all that stuff.
Except for resolution. So resolution is obviously, it's a 720p, basically, panel. It's 1280 by 800. And so it's locked to that. So it's
1280 by 800, really?
Yeah, so it's just a 720p panel.
Okay.
And it works just fine. In that form factor, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And so that obviously is going to take a lot of the tax down. You don't have, you know, even with a 1080p monitor, you're going to have at least a 50%, 60% bump, something like that, in the number of pixels you'd have to push just for 1080.
Right.
That's not considering Quad HD or 4K. So, you know, comparing, you know, apples to apples here, it's a custom GPU or an AMD APU in that thing. It's been compared to Zen. I'd have to look back in my article again now. I looked it up for it. Zen 2,
yeah, because we're on Zen 3.
And then what's their, I can't think of their GPU architecture off the top of my head.
It's Radeon and...
Radeon something. It's an 8-core Radeon something.
RDNA.
Was there a number with it?
2.
RDNA 2.
There you go.
Yeah, like, and to me, I'm going, okay, that literally means
nothing. I have zero gauge for that. Like, yeah, like, what's that? That's a dedicated GPU, but it's 3050 or 60.
It's NVIDIA 30...
I want to say 60. Yeah.
3060, because there's a 3070 that's better. But it's...
There's a 3080 now. Okay. It's crazy. It's just...
Insane. So, you know, it's not like this Steam Deck is maintaining some, like, big gamer, you know, towers worth of hardware.
Right.
It's pretty modest, to be honest with you.
You know, what's crazy is that's similar to what's in the Atari VCS that's on my desk, but I have not seen nearly that good a performance from the Atari.
Well, and that's what I just wonder, like, with the Steam Deck, if they didn't spend time to really think, I'm getting a phone call and it won't go away. I want to decline you. There we go. With the Steam Deck, if like it's a custom APU GPU built 100% just to run Steam.
Right.
You know, like that's like they were able to narrow that focus a little bit. So I think some of the higher-end Chromebooks that are coming will probably have CPUs that are way better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, based on early benchmarks, what we've seen, the 12th gen CPUs from Intel and their Iris Xe graphics, they're up there. They're up there with like 2000 series GPUs.
Yeah, and so I feel like the CPU is going to be way stronger than what's in the Steam Deck, and the GPU might be on par right. with it. And so, but the combination of the two, just a high-end Chromebook with Steam games, should be really great. Like, it would be a different thing if it was like, it's a little jittery or whatever, but the point of the video is to actually show some gameplay and show us moving around and see, like, there's no frame drops and textures look really rich and nice, and you're getting all the lighting effects. And,
right.
You know, Apex is running just brilliantly, and don't forget, this is an executable file. It's a Windows executable file, and if you didn't know any better, and I just handed that to you and you played it, and I said, hey, this is a Linux-based machine, you would think that game is clearly written for Linux. It's There's crazy. No way that something written for a completely different binary is going to run this well on a piece of hardware. And it does.
Right.
And it wasn't just Apex. Apex was just a good a thing that I downloaded and had ready. But, you know, we tried multiple games. And
that, PUBG, that's thought,
PUBG yeah. did not work.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just wasn't working. But they've got a whole list of... it didn't show it on there. But they've got a whole list of... what do they call it? Great on deck, is that what it is? Or good on deck?
I don't great know. On deck sounds cool. Deck. I like that.
I think yeah. it's great on deck. And so if it's good, it gets put in that list. I think they've tested a little bit, and then they'll also ask you, like, I got polled a couple times, like, do you feel like this game is running well?
Yeah.
You know, rate this and whatever. And so games that get rated well get put into this thing. So as a Steam Deck user, you'll be able to go through that. Hopefully that means that, you know, once they get Steam fully rolled out on Chromebooks, we'll get kind of the same thing. Great on Chromebooks.
Yeah, that gives me a lot of hope, because I was curious. I hadn't tinkered with Borealis for a couple of months, actually. So yesterday I reinstalled it on the CX9 and was playing Day of Defeat. And in my head, it feels better than it did when they first rolled it out, but it's still not great.
Yeah.
And I was worried. I was worried that it's like, well, they're never going to be able to get this to work quite right. But this is proof positive that there's no reason, because Borealis is technically running on bare metal. It's just being served through Chrome OS as a display.
Right.
There's no reason this shouldn't run very well.
Yeah,
like Day of Defeat same. Source on a what is that's an i7. There's no reason it shouldn't run very
perfectly
well.
Perfectly smooth. Yeah. So. And you know, the 12th gen processors or Intel processors are faster, but the GPU is a big improvement
yeah.
over 11th gen even, which was a big step up. So I mean, I think the combination of all that stuff's going to help things be pretty good. And like you said, really the only bar to any of this working, because it was like multiple pieces when we first heard about this. It's like, okay, one, Proton's got to work. So Proton's the compatibility layer that makes, because there's not a whole lot. They're a handful. But by that, I mean like 5,000, I think we looked it up.
Yeah.
Linux games. But there are like 50,000 Windows games.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the whole thing was kind of hinging on the idea of Linux being able to run Windows games well. So that was one thing.
But that was the cool thing is that, you know, that was all in Valve's hands, because they had to make it work to make this thing
right.
work. So that wasn't the onus wasn't on Google on there, which is really cool. I'm sure they had a hand in it, but
right. And so that it was like cool. I feel confident in saying that Valve has gotten past that. Like they've made it to the point where this is 100% playable. Is it gonna work on every single game? Probably not, but I think they're aiming for like a 99% compatibility rate.
And they're not far off.
Yeah, I want to say they're in the mid-90s already something. So that was the big first jump. And then the second jump is just making sure that the container that this is sitting in is going to work the way it's supposed to in Chrome OS. And so, you know, it's running Arch Linux. So is the Steam Deck. If you're using the same Proton protocol, it's really, I mean, it feels a little bit apples to apples now that we've kind of had some time with the Steam Deck to go, this is what I'm going to expect on
and a I will properly say that, powerful yeah, Chromebook. The gameplay yesterday wasn't decidedly different, but I have noticed I'm always connected to an external monitor, and when I launch a Steam game, I have to close my Chromebook because it doesn't push it correctly and everything's off. But once I close it and relaunch the game on my monitor, it works fine. But the boot and the load for steam was way faster, and it looks a lot cleaner. It looks like they've really tweaked it, because you know, yep, you always get the main window that pops up, and then you get the chat window, and then you get the news. You get the three windows that pop up. They all popped up simultaneously, and they loaded super fast. It looked really clean. It felt like I was playing on a native machine.
So. Yeah. So I mean, they'll get that stuff worked out. I have little to no doubt that they'll get all those pieces. But once they've got that stuff done, and the container is taking full advantage of the hardware on offer, we're going to have some Chromebooks that are going to be really good at running Steam games.
Right. And that's the other thing. And I'm sure they're working on this, but, you know, Crostini and Linux has access to the GPU, but it kind of feels like it's just like a... Like, you remember back in the day, you had a Windows machine, and if you didn't have the right driver for something, you would use a generic driver. It feels like that, because there are certain software that... They work just fine in the Linux container, but if you go to adjust your GPU settings, it's clearly not seeing the GPU.
Right.
And that's a Chrome OS thing, because like DaVinci Resolve is the one of the other big video editors. I have read in forums where guys have these new Tiger Lake Windows laptops with Xe graphics. DaVinci Resolve will see that GPU, and it recognizes it, which allows you to tweak the GPU settings. It will not even see it on a Chromebook. So that's something Google's probably still working out, but eventually we'll get to that point. And then that means eventually these containers, whether it's Steam or Linux or whatever, will be able to see the onboard GPUs. But hopefully, with what like Robbie found earlier this week, we'll be able to recognize external GPUs. And then
hopefully
that becomes a game changer entirely for Chromebooks. Yeah. So,
because, you know, like stuff, I know that, you know, LumaFusion, for instance, is coming via Android.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working hard on getting that done. But, you know, these different things where you have photo and video editors that need GPU support basically to do what they need to do better.
Right.
You know, Google has to keep working, figuring out ways to make that easier as a more of a generic thing instead of, and I get it, like it's harder with Chrome OS because it's not a Windows device. It's not like, oh, go online and get all your drivers and all that kind of stuff. It's, okay, well, now we've got to make sure that this stuff's built in and can see, you know, these GPUs and work properly with them without the end user really doing anything. Right. And so that's a lot of work.
It's a big hurdle, but also feel like it should be, in the long run, it should be a little easier than other aspects. It's not like we're talking about printers here where there's 10,000 models on the market.
Right.
We just need support for, you know, the basic NVIDIA drivers, the basic Intel GPU drivers.
Right, because, I mean, really, they have control over what Chromebooks are going to come out and what GPUs are actually going to become available. And so if they say, hey, look, we're going to allow two different models from NVIDIA, one from AMD, and the Intel, whatever is coming in the latest Intel, we'll build that obviously into the baseboard for that. And that's it. Like, we're not supporting all this other stuff for right now. And, you know, there are repositories where those drivers exist, just like with the printer thing. The Chromebook could spin up, the container spins up, says, it's this GPU, go get that driver. Yep. Put them together. I mean, I'm oversimplifying what is probably an insanely complex thing.
Right, but yeah, you look at it, like possible. If you go to the Works with Chromebook has a new page that shows all the official Works with Chromebook hardware, and for whatever reason, I don't know why other companies haven't gotten on board, but if you go to the printer section, it's all HP, but there's probably 100 of them. It looks like HP and Google have worked together to figure out what you just said. Hey, your Chromebook starts up and you have a network printer in your house, go ping this server and get whatever you need.
I guarantee that. And that's all,
it's
the whole
be.
CUPS printing thing is
yep,
what that was.
That's what
and
it
they,
is.
They rolled that stuff into, you know, the printer service on Chromebooks. Because, you know, I go through a lot of Chromebooks and you do too. Like, I'll need to print something, just needed to yesterday. And I hadn't set up any printers on that particular device. And go get on the network. It sees the printer. You click it. It says setting up. Takes about 5-10 seconds.
Yep.
And then it's like, cool, ready.
You're printing.
Well, what it did was it went and got the drivers and set things up. And so, you know, that kind of operation can work for GPUs and all that kind of stuff down the road.
Yep.
If that's the way they choose to go. So.
Yeah, I mean, and one really cool way that Google could corral that and kind of do some quality assurance on that is just a suggestion if they haven't already thought about it. Allow Google should create their own database server for Works with Chromebook products. Mm-hmm. If your product is Works with Chromebook certified, give us your, you know, put your drivers here.
All the stuff needed.
Anytime you have an update, bring your updates here. That way people know they're getting what they need from a secured, safe, trusted source, and it all lives right here.
And they might be doing that. Like I hope so. New settings in there to update peripherals or whatever. And so, I mean,
that's got to be going to be something like to a Google server, because who knows what peripherals you have plugged in.
Yeah. Right. And so it's got to know, like, ping, here's the MAC address or whatever for this particular mouse, go find the updates. Yeah. And I'm still waiting for the time that it actually populates with something.
I'm gonna look that up now because like I said, they just launched a new Works with Chromebooks site. It's actually a slide, which is really cool. They're using Google Slides for it, but I'll go back in the repository and dig around and see if they actually have some sort of database where they're putting their software and stuff. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So, but yeah. Speaking of these things,
yeah, segue, but then we derailed again. Sorry.
we came across a new commit that is an older Chromebook device that is one of the many Alder Lake, so 12th gen Intel Chromebooks on the way. There's bunches of them. It was Draco before, so I found this after.
With a K, right?
No, with a C.
Oh, is it with
Draco?
Oh,
cool. So,
like Malfoy, Draco.
But it was in the list of just, you know, it's another 12th gen Chromebook, whatever. And then we found the GPU stuff, and then I found an older commit saying change Draco to Aga.
Aga, yeah. It was A-G-H-O or
A-G-A-H.
A-A, yeah.
Aga.
Which is
they're all Destiny characters.
It's the last name of a... I think it's a minor character in Destiny, but yeah, it's in Destiny. So,
which is a perfect thing. Like, if you know you're going to bank a bunch of Chromebooks off of a baseboard, like, Destiny's a good place to go because there's so many names.
Yeah.
It's just a huge, like, universe of stuff. But, Aga was found and clearly has reference to NVIDIA GPUs. Mm-hmm. So, they're getting drivers and basically turning things on so that the onboard GPU will be working. And so it's like, okay, we kind of knew, like, we've said this what feels like 100 times of, like, eventually, you know, we'll get a Chromebox or something. And I thought it was a Chromebox at first because it has a barrel jack for a charger,
which is,
and I didn't point that out in the article. Maybe I should have. I might do another roundup because there's a bunch of other little stuff around it. But backing up, once I figured out that Draco was the old name of it, well, Draco has very clear ties to HP, from emails that are on the commits to the battery that's inside of it. Like, it looks like it's going to be before I'd already kind of pinned it as an HP device. And so now it's like, okay, well, they just changed the name. It's not like they changed the device. So it looks like we could be getting an HP, and their gaming is what?
Omen.
Yeah. An HP Omen Chromebook.
Yeah.
And so the idea being, you know, you launch this. I could see, like, CES or something, them having something around then and saying, hey, look, we've got, this is a Chromebook, and it's going to have the gamer aesthetic, and it's going to have all the gamer stuff. And, yeah, you can play your online streaming games, too. That's fine. But this one's built for Steam games. And, yeah, it's Chrome OS, and it's going to be fast because it's got a GPU. And you can do all your other stuff with it, too. But this one's going to have a gamer aesthetic to it. That would be my guess. Yeah, I mean,
because I'm thinking I don't think Steam is going to technically be in beta until the end of this year. So we're probably looking middle or end of next year before it's official.
I would have said that doesn't line up with, you know, there'll be 13th gen, whether Raptor Lake or whatever coming out.
Yeah.
But the release schedule, the way it looks like it's going, like, we're just now, I got the Dragonfly in there. You know, that's the first, like, a retail version.
Yeah,
of
we'll be closing in on 2024 before we...
Oh, yeah. I feel like
we get Raptor Lake.
I think so, because
that one Raptor Lake device was just added a week or two ago.
It's just starting thinking about developing for the next
I'm calling generation. It now. I'm saying it's a Google Chromebook.
So I just think...
It's probably not, but if it is, how cool am I going to look?
I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
Just go and put it out there.
Yeah, there you go.
It says Google on it. That used to be enough.
Yeah, if I'm wrong, we'll just delete this podcast.
But yeah, like, I think there are going to be multiple of these. The barrel jack, again, threw me off for a minute because I was like, oh, barrel jack means it's a Chromebox. Like, they don't put barrel jacks on Chromebooks anymore. But you're going to need, if you got a GPU in there, it's probably going to have a pretty
big fan array.
Oh,
yeah. It's going to need some power. But there's some other fun stuff on there that, like I said, I'm going to do another roundup of some of the details about it.
Now, we've had a Chromebox that was USB-C power, but does USB, will USB-C do like 160?
I think 4.0 is the one that carries more. So what I saw is that they're working on a switch basically to get 100 watts over USB Type-C and the ability for the Chromebook to understand if you had the C plugged in, you popped out the barrel charger, like it would know to switch over to that, I'm guessing. But yeah, I don't think I've ever seen 100 watts over USB Type-C.
Because if it has all of that, it's going to have to be at least 100 watts. At least.
Yeah. And that's the spec that they're showing right now. And that's what they're testing anyway. They might be able to push more than that.
I really, really hope that Google is working with, I mean, awesome if it was DaVinci. There are a couple Linux editors, video editors that have launched official Chrome OS support, which is funny because I downloaded one the other day and I won't name any names because at least they're trying, but the Chrome OS version that they have does not work that well. And it works with it integrates with Blender so you can create your titles and stuff, but it will not work with the latest version of Blender. So you have to install the Chrome OS version of the video editor and then go install the older version of Blender in order for it to work. And I'm like, Google needs to pick one, and it should be DaVinci Resolves, or is Lightworks? Lightworks. Because I've tried multiple times to install it and I can't get it to work, but it has a Linux version. They need to work hand in hand, and then when they roll out all this dedicated GPU stuff, they need to focus it around that and gaming. I think they
really should. Yeah, because they could do the same thing they're doing with Borealis. Like, at some point, somebody at Google just talked somebody else into, like, hey, we can use this container stuff to make proper gaming. Let's go talk to Valve and see if they would be willing to help. Sure, okay, cool. Let's build a container for this thing, this one particular thing. And I think that's the route to go for these types of more intense applications, like where a service really wants to be involved with Chrome OS. Like, let's build out a container that suits it perfectly.
There's no reason not to, because a lot of these Linux applications and everything, they all have multiple different, most of them have different versions that can be installed depending on which Linux distro you're using.
Right.
But most of them have a primary distro. They're like, you know, we recommend this.
Right.
Build a container with that. Google has documentation on how to install your own Linux container with the distro that you want. Build a container, much like Arch Linux for Steam, that's built just for my video editor. It has everything needed in it, nothing more, nothing less. You can't tamper with the container and tweak it and mess with anything. It's just designed to run this. Then it just looks like an app.
Yeah, it's a one-click install.
Steam doesn't look like a Linux distribution. It looks like an app.
Just installed Steam.
Yeah,
you don't need to know anything else.
Nope, the container installs in the background, and then you have a Steam button, a Steam icon like you would on your Windows device, and it just launches.
And it's exactly what we've been talking about for years that they could do. And so I know it takes work, and they can't do that for every single application, but this is the one thing.
Yeah. This is the 1% that keeps people away from Chrome OS.
Yep. And gaming and video editing, we've talked about it. And photo editing to a point, but I'm like, there are some pretty decent options out
Dark
there.
Darktable is awesome for Linux photos.
And I would say, like, if Adobe had, you know, their suite for Linux, I would 100%. It's like, just go work with Adobe and build a container and put it in there. But they don't even have it for Linux.
There's
to begin
something
with.
Adobe on the perks page right now, but I can't remember what it is.
I don't know.
It's not Rush.
No, yeah, that clearly, it never like got canceled, but it clearly got canceled.
Yeah, so just don't talk about it.
Yeah, which they could have had a huge success with Adobe Rush and Android, but they're going to be usurped by LumaFusion.
Honestly, KiniMaster had a good opportunity to optimize for Chromebooks, and they never really did.
They're like, here's some shortcuts. That's all we're gonna
do. Which stinks because it's a killer Android app.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
It could do most of, we could do 85% of what most people are going to want to do on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
The only other thing I could think is like, man, I would love to see somebody figure out, whether it's WeVideo or Shotcut or somebody, like figure out how to use local do all the stuff local, no uploading to the cloud in a browser. And I get it. It's not good. Like, the exporting is probably not going to be fast,
right,
like super fast. But is there some way to do some light video editing on local stuff with local hardware?
So I feel like Clipchamp's trying to do that, because none of your stuff is sync. Like, if I do something on Clipchamp on one Chromebook, it does not sync to its. Your projects sync, but your media and stuff doesn't. They're trying to do that. Microsoft bought them, so if anyone does it, it'll probably be them. But yeah, I don't know.
I just don't know that the tech is even there, yeah, from a web development standpoint, and you know what PWAs have access to, and browsers and all that stuff. It may just not quite be there. But
and that's the thing. PWAs have come so far in the past 5 years. It is just a matter of time. It's a matter of time before you can do just basic video editing in the browser offline, where you can cut, trim, do effects, volume stuff. And like you said, for most people that are just doing, you know, casual social media stuff, that's all you need.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
And not having to have the internet connection and uploading stuff. Like, that's the kind of the crux of it.
Yeah, because that's the problem now with all the video editors, is that, you know, the editing itself isn't that bad, because it is mostly being done locally. It's the minute you go to render the video.
Render it,
it's
got
to go to the server and all that stuff. So that's what takes time. So, all right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about some Chrome and Chrome OS news, and then who knows what else. So, be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service, and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunboxed.com/Nord, N-O-R-D. Today's episode is brought to you by Cameo. If your organization is looking to adopt Chromebooks, but you need to give your people seamless access to all their apps, including Windows apps, Cameo is the simplest and most secure and most cost-effective way to deliver all the apps your people need to be productive on Chrome OS. Cameo is a Chrome Enterprise recommended virtualization solution and is deeply integrated with Chrome OS and the Google Admin Console, making it easy for you to push any app as a PWA to your Chromebooks. And now you can take advantage of a special Chrome OS and Cameo bundle that makes it easier than ever to test. If you're interested, you can head over to cameo.com/unboxed. That's cameo.com/unboxed, or click the link down in the show notes.
All right, welcome back. We are talking about Chrome and Chrome OS 103. They both rolled out in the last 2 days, and not like super stunning, you know, fireworks features, but there's a lot. There's a lot to unpack in all of the updates. So
yeah, especially like Chrome OS 103 has some stuff arriving that, heck, we've been talking about since January.
Mm-hmm.
CES, they had some announcements about, you know, better together and stuff. That it is a stuff that we've been tracking for a long time, and so sometimes it can feel like, oh, it's here, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about this before, but for the general consumer who has a Chromebook, who may peruse an article every once in a while and be like, oh, that thing's coming, then they just kind of move on and forget about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I even do that to an extent. Like, I'm like, oh, that thing's coming, cool, that'll be neat, and then I move on and kind of don't really think about it, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, it's coming.
And
it's
a
like,
lot of consumers may not we tend to forget that a good majority of people don't sit and read tech news that much.
No.
My wife could care less.
Like, is it
She's
on
not
my
stupid.
Device?
She's very computer savvy, but she does not sit around and follow tech news. Most people only want to hear about stuff when it arrives,
or if they need help with something.
Yeah. So, Chrome for desktop, iOS, and Android all rolled out Tuesday, and then Chrome OS 103 should be rolling out anytime now. I haven't looked to see if it is updated. But Screencast, is it official now?
Yep. Or? So Screencast, and we'll talk about each one of these real quick. But Screencast, nearby sharing, Wi-Fi credentials, fast pairing, and then the
which
photo
that roll. One's cool, because I've never been able to get that one to work. I'm always in Canary. I'm on 105 now, and that one's never worked for me. But one thing I've learned is that especially when it comes to sharing and security features, they're often nerfed in Canary because there's no reason in hardening the security of a channel that most people shouldn't be in the first place.
Right. And so. you have to be in developer mode too, right?
Yes.
For that. So yeah, you've already unsecured your device to begin with. So
I'm vulnerable.
Yeah. So I get those kind of features, not mm-hmm. either not being in Canary or being just broken so right. that they're not usable. But yeah, so the first one, it's the one I'm probably most excited about is the recent photos from your phone.
Yeah.
I think that's just going to be a nice workflow thing. So idea being, I take my phone, snap a photo of Paul there, the plant, Apus, and I get the photo, and I want to use it in a social media post, or I want to use it in an article or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's now going to pop up in my, what is the phone thing? Phone hub.
Yeah.
At the bottom right hand, I'm like, is it
Toast? Hub. Just no, remember, Google Toast. Likes hubs. Personalization yeah. hub, privacy yeah, hub, phone hub.
Hubs. HubSpot.
That's different.
And so you'll be able to just, I'm assuming it'll work just like the tote, mm-hmm. you know, the recent files area.
Yeah,
works.
I think it shows three or four of yeah. your most recent.
And you'll just be able to grab it and drag it into things.
And that's what's like, cool, because I remember when we discovered it and we started writing about it, like, and at first in my mind, I'm like, how lazy have we become? You know, because Google Photos is pert near instantaneous,
and that's basically what I use.
Yeah, for. That's what I do. Nearby Share has gotten really, really good.
It's so also an option.
You can nearby, but when you're talking, because and this is weird because I'm trying to teach my kids patience, because children have no patience. They want everything, and we live in a society of, you know, microwave everything. We want it done now. There are times when that's not good, but there are times when it's really good. And this may seem trivial, but to be able to snap a photo, this is just our use case. I'm sure there are countless other use cases. To be able to snap a photo for a featured image and it's instantaneously available.
Yep.
It just the two or three or four steps it takes to navigate to Google Photos or to go to your phone and nearby share to yourself, that time over time saves a lot of time.
Yeah.
And to me it's a big deal, even though it seems like it's kind
of
trivial.
And there's lots of work being done to get like a lot of the Google Photos editing stuff in mm-hmm. on the local media app.
Yep. So basically, you have the Google Photos edit button in there now if you have Android apps enabled, which whatever.
Yeah, and so I've not actually messed with it. So does it open the Android Google Photos app?
Yes. Or no, you have to have the Google Photos. It won't even show up unless you have Android apps enabled. So
yeah, and that's the only part of the workflow that I'm like, I don't. It's going to come in handy for certain things, and it's not going to be handy for other things. Like, it's just going to depend. Like, if I'm in the middle of a conversation, for instance, on WhatsApp or in Discord on my Chromebook, it's not like that's not real time on my phone. But if I take a picture on my phone, now I've got to go open the app, even though I'm already in the chat up here. I'm gonna have to open the app here, find, you know, get to that particular chat, hit the plus button,
right,
find that photo, click it and share it, versus snap, drag.
Yep.
Done. Like, I could see that working really in all kinds of ways, because in my head, if I'm taking a photo I'm going to use for a featured image, I'm probably going to edit that photo in some way, shape, or form. I'm going to, like, in Google Photos for me generally, I just hit the enhance button and let it kind of do its thing. And so it's like, I could do that on my phone. That'll be interesting to see what it does with that, because my guess is it's going to show you the camera roll. And when you edit in Google Photos,
it is camera roll.
You're editing. I don't know. Maybe if you save. I'm not sure how that works now that I think about it. When you make an edit to a Google Photo and save it as a copy, does it save a local version of that, or does this just save it?
I don't think so. If you're doing it in Google Photos, I think it just saves it to Google Photos.
So that probably won't show in your camera roll. No. So it's going to be unedited photos only. So I'm like,
we can try it later.
Then I'm going to have to. But if you're someone who edits, who likes to do more manual edits, and you edit in Lightroom or something like that, this makes for a great productivity.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a cool. What is Tote? I'm sitting here thinking about what is Tote actually called. They call it. Is it just recent files or something? They call it something.
The official name is Tote. But
is that what
they
call? I thought that was the development name. I get mixed up.
No, because I remember the press release. They called it the Tote.
What was it called in the? I'm trying to remember what it was called in the in development when it was getting made. It had another name, but whatever. So I use Tote constantly. So I'll save an image, or I'll take a screen grab, for instance, of like a commit, and it drops it down. You see it pop over there in Tote. I'm in the article I'm in. I just go over there and grab it, drag it into the article. Boom! It uploads the photo for me into the website.
Right.
And so if it works like that, I would be super excited.
Yeah, because I'll usually, if I'm taking one just so I can drag it into something, it's super easy to drag it into Squoosh. You just drag it right into Squoosh and squoosh it down. Are you looking up Tote over there? Because now I'm all curious.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
I thought Tote was the development name, but now I may be getting backwards.
Holding Space.
Holding Space is what it was called in development.
Yes.
And then they came out with Tote. Okay.
Maybe.
I got backwards. Holding Space. I'm glad they didn't go with that. That'd be a terrible name.
It's like Holding Space. I think it is. Yeah, the flag was Holding Space in Progress Downloads Integration.
Holding Hub. It's a hub.
My hold hub. Gosh.
All right. So the next thing, FastPair. So it's not just... FastPair has worked on and off in different versions of Chrome when you turn the flag on and turn it off. Like, it has been around for a little while, if I remember correctly. Like, we're seeing, FastPair kind of working on and off for... I feel like it's been 6 months to a year.
I would say, I feel like it was definitely last year sometime, because we've been talking about it for over a year.
Yeah, because it came out on Android, and it was like, oh, it's going to be out on Chrome OS, immediately. And it just wasn't. And it kind of worked, and then it didn't. But the idea of FastPair, and Apple, anybody that uses Apple products will hear this and just be like, yeah. I mean, of course it does, because that's... Apple products have done this really well for quite some time.
He's dying of it. He's got something to say.
Where, you pair your earbuds, they got to be AirPods, obviously, but you pair your Apple audio accessory, and, it's now available on all your Apple devices. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, you pick up that device, and it's MAC address and everything, the Bluetooth ID, and those are not changing. So if you sync that information across the account, as soon as any device that you're signed into sees that particular piece of hardware, it should be able to just pair with it.
Yeah, and no knock against Google, because they're, but at the same time, they're the king of sync. Everything is about account syncing. Yeah. This should have been
my guess.
And granted, if it works really well, then great, because there are things that Google swings and misses on, and then there are things like Nearby Share that
they wait, and then when it's done, they roll it out, and it's awesome.
Flipping phenomenal. Nearby Share is incredible.
And so I'm hoping that's the case with FastPair. I've only really used FastPair on, I only carry one Android device at a time. So it's not like I have an Android tablet and, an Android, I don't know what else, carrying around that my earbuds are going to move between. I just have the one phone. And so getting FastPair working properly on my Google account between my phone and my Chromebook is going to be a big deal.
That's the only thing that matters to me. Yeah.
To know that, my guess is, and it says coming soon, it says later this summer, hopefully their aim is to make sure it's done before the Pixel Buds Pro come out. So the idea being, I get my Pixel Buds.
Because it's end of next month. Yeah.
I get my Pixel Buds Pro out. I flip them open. My Chromebook and my phone see them for FastPair. I choose my Chromebook. I pair it up and get it all done. And then I should be able to immediately just switch to them on my phone. That's the idea. It's the your account level carrying of these hardware things. I don't know what other devices. They said there's over 100, I think, earphones that technically have the FastPair stuff in them to be able to be used this way. And so as long as the hardware meets the spec, FastPairing should start working across Chromebooks and Android devices. And again, it's nothing on the surface. It's going to be it's faster to pair them. And that's neat. I like that. I like not having to hold the button, wait for the line, and do all that kind of stuff. That's nice. But the better part is, ideally, if I sign into another Chromebook, which I sign into lots of Chromebooks, so for me, this sounds great. Once it gets up and running and it's all connected, just like my Wi-Fi network, that it knows all of those, it should know all my Bluetooth accessories too, and I should just be able to flip that thing open. And yes, I would like to go ahead and connect to those and not have to repair them to all of my devices.
Yep. And that's exactly how it should work, because it's gotten to the point now where everything kind of centers around the phone for me. If I get on a Wi-Fi with my phone, but then I go back to that place with my Chromebook knows it. You know, I don't have to put that in. And
I tested that one time. I think it works the other way, too. If you forget a Wi-Fi network on your phone and you establish that connection on your Chromebook, your phone will eventually pick it up as well.
I believe that because I continue to forget the other network here, and it continues to find it again. So I guess I need to forget it on
the phone.
That's so annoying.
So that plays into, since we're kind of talking about Wi-Fi connections and stuff,
nearby share is gaining the ability to basically allow you to nearby share Wi-Fi credentials other devices. So like if you're setting up a new Chromebook or you're somebody, like we just talked about, you know, Wi-Fi gets saved on your accounts, but if you happen to go to say somebody's house and or you're meeting somebody at a coffee shop they go to all the time, and you're like, hey, what's the Wi-Fi password? And, I don't remember, there's a big long line up there. They'll be able to actually nearby share you the Wi-Fi stuff. Boom, share it over to your Chromebook, you accept it, and you're online. Which I don't know how often that'll get used, but it's a cool idea. Or if you're at home, you know, so you invite a guest over and they need to get on the Wi-Fi. I can't tell you how many times, like, I know my Wi-Fi password. I know exactly what it is, but I go to other people's houses and I'm like, hey, what's your Wi-Fi password? And they're like, like my parents are like this. They'll change it or whatever. My dad's like, let's see.
I don't know.
Going to look for his little piece of paper or this note he kept, and he kept his Wi-Fi password in a, and I think like in a contact at one point in time on his phone.
That's better. My mother-in-law is a note writer, so she'll just scribble on stuff. So if you go to her house, there's notes just everywhere, and you'll see like an old letter or something, and it's laying on the counter.
A little note on there.
There's a password. Like, that's the password to your T-Mobile account. Okay. All right. So I thought you could do that from Android. Am I wrong? Or is it just a Pixel thing? I have shared.
Pixel, I think you can share it like with a QR code, I think.
Yeah, because I remember looking up my mother-in-law's password on the Pixel 6 through the settings. But there's a share option, too.
So here we go.
There's, yeah, let's check this out.
Let's see. Can I? Yeah, so you can share, and it's.
But what option?
I think it just gives you a
QR code nearby.
Oh, there you go.
What does that do if you
so
try
I'm
to
guessing
send?
That's going to be on Chromebooks now, too. Yes. So I can nearby share, and the Chromebook can understand this. Or maybe it already works.
Click it. Let's see what. Yeah, so it says devices sharing.
Yeah, so I'm going to click send it to you and see what happens.
I'm already connected to that Wi-Fi, but it connected to that Wi-Fi and said connecting.
We'll get off here. We may try to do it on a Chromebook
because it's trying to autofill. So it's just going to work the other direction. So that's cool.
Yeah. And again, it could be already, like Google does this sometimes. They'll announce new stuff that started working like 3 weeks ago because it might have been a server-side kind of update. And it's part of this new update. They're just bringing, you know, shedding light on it because it's the same thing they're doing with the screencast app. Like, we've already talked extensively about it, what it does, but they're rolling that into this update and like, hey, we want you to remember this is part of it. And it, I think it's going to be widely available now for everybody.
Is the selfie cam going to be in there?
Selfie cam.
With the screen. This is for the screencast.
Oh, screencast thing. Yeah, that's part of the screencast.
Okay, because I've got it enabled on my device with the flag, but I haven't checked lately to see if it's working without, but surely they're rolling it out with that.
Yeah, you know, and that's the other thing with these announcements is that this stuff probably is built into 103, or they expect it to come at some point in the next 4 weeks. It may all roll out now. It may, some of it may roll out, but the fact that they announced, for instance, the fast pair stuff and said it's coming soon, like, there's no need for them. If it's not going to work in 103, we only have 4 weeks to 104, so there's no need for them to have put it in there. So I would assume it will show up
they're
in the next 4 weeks.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they want to have it, for instance, again, before the Pixel Buds Pro come out. So, that's to me, that's the most notable update we've had in a little while.
Yeah.
As far as, like, new, it's not new features we've never heard of. I don't think, as long as we keep digging and other news outlets keep digging around for new stuff that's coming, and there's beta and canary channels and developer channels of Chrome OS, I feel like we're never going to get to the point where, like, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, we're not going to have some huge announcement of a feature that's live now.
Right.
That
someone's going to stumble across.
Otherwise,
it.
We're not doing our jobs.
Yeah.
Know,
so. Enough people are looking. So, but I mean, like, I've never actually seen the photo. You know, the recent photos thing ever working. We've had flags and stuff for it. Have you seen that?
I've had it on when I was still driving the Pixel. It worked in Canary.
Oh, okay.
But it's not working. Like, this will, I can set my phone up on Phone Hub right now. It won't show up. It's weird.
And I've seen fast pair stuff working intermittently.
Sort of, yeah.
And it works to get it paired up to the Chromebook, but then it's like, okay, my want for it was always, okay, I can fast pair these Pixel Buds. We have the Pixel Buds A I'll use to test. fast pair them there, my phone should have these now.
Right.
And it's never worked that way. So I'm hoping that works. The nearby share thing is whatever. But like screencast rolling out, like we've messed with it in full. We've done a little video about it.
And I will say it's cool to see them rolling it out now because it's not been a thing for that long.
No,
I mean, they've been working on it for a long time, but it was just discovered a few months ago. Usually features this robust are months and months in development, and I'm sure they're trying to get it ready for the school year, because as much as I wanted this to be for like streaming and stuff like that, it's not. This is geared towards schools and businesses and stuff like that, and that's fine. It's a great productivity tool. So,
and a quick shout out too, we have an interview coming with I don't remember
Andy Russell.
There you go. Andrew was in on all of those. Yeah. Andrew was in on all of those interviews. We've had quite a few of them in the last couple weeks that will be going up on the podcast channel as well. So if you're listening to this, this one will be out before that interview. But that interview was basically all about screencast, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So a cool interview with a Googler about that particular feature. So more on that hopefully next week as we finish up. Kind of putting the last bits and pieces on that interview.
One thing to note about 103, so Chrome for Android desktop and iOS also rolled out this week, and there's some good features in there. The machine learning stuff about notifications that Michael wrote about earlier this month is in there. But the one big notable thing is you had mentioned when we were talking yesterday, the password management for iOS.
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal because, you know, Apple obviously likes to keep their ecosystem locked down really well, and they want everything to be managed through iOS, but now you'll be able to autofill, I guess.
That's what the press release said. Until the feature actually shows up, I will read you exactly what it says. Until the feature actually shows up, I don't want to necessarily say that's exactly what it would be, but here, I'll read it to you. Google Password Manager, so that's what we all use. It's the passwords.google.com. It's what Chrome uses. It's what Android uses. Google Password Manager is built into Chrome on your computer or Android phone. On iOS, you can set it up as your autofill provider so Chrome can help you quickly and securely create, store, and fill in your passwords into any website or app on your iOS device.
Right. So that website, app is awesome. Because as far as I know, that's never even had an option.
Can't look at Andrew.
It's always been there.
He wouldn't have tried. But
what's their password manager called?
It's just passwords in the
Something key or something.
Keychain. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I would be interested to see how that works. So I've got an iPad, so all I got to do is I think I got it somewhere. I don't know what I did with it. It's around.
You probably sold it.
But I'll get it fired up, and I did something with it. I thought I was.
You let someone. No, you've got it. I think you've got it.
I hope so. I'll get that all going. I'll get Chrome on it and all that good stuff.
I just noticed the shirt you're wearing.
Yeah, DJ.
I said that in the car the other day. We were taking the kids to drop them off before we went to see Maverick, and I said that, and nice. I don't even know why I said that. And then had to go.
Need a good reason.
No, absolutely not. I had to go through the my daughter's like, "Who's that?" And I was like, "Well, DJ Tanner is the eldest daughter on Full House, but DJ Tanner
is
a vice presidential candidate from Elizabethtown, Kentucky.
Yes, it's a silly character from the Eric and Joe show.
And he's great. So yeah, that's about it for 103. So we'll check that off the list.
And in 4 weeks, there'll be 104.
Yep,
rolling, baby.
I noticed when I was writing the desktop Chrome article, I was looking at some other sites just to see what their coverage was. Multiple sites. Opening paragraph talking about Google is smashing this 4 week cycle. And they are, because prior to this, especially with Chrome OS, there were times where we would literally be approaching the next update before an update would roll out.
Yeah.
You know, and they are like clockwork. I mean, I think Chrome OS is like 1 or 2 days late sometimes, but it's the 4 weeks is.
Yeah, and I think what it's done is allowed them to just kind of breathe a little bit. It seems like more updates would make it more stressful, but they're not trying to cram as much into each update.
It's finer tuning focus instead of looking at, we've got 6 weeks to get all of this stuff done. Let's let's just focus on these few core areas. We've got this one feature. We've got all these security updates, and then we're going to tweak this stuff. Let's just do that.
Yep. Yeah. And it's okay because we have another update coming in 4 more weeks. So
yeah,
it's
exactly.
fine. If we have to push that one to the next thing, it's fine. I think it has created some stress relief for them.
Yeah.
It feels like anyway. And so, yeah, they've been kind of rolling through.
Yeah, and updates. It's funny because we get the obligatory articles about, you know, Chrome's been hacked and Chrome's insecure and all that stuff. And it's like, you know what? With more release cycles, there's going to be more bugs. And they find these bugs and they squash them. And the fact that we have a 4-week release cycle and there's always one incremental update in between. So technically you're getting updates every 2 weeks. That's making Chrome more secure,
right?
Not less secure. You know,
no, it's just good headlines.
It's whatever. Yeah.
People click, like the clicks.
Do it. So there you go. So, I don't know, iOS, we were talking about iOS on Chrome. So Apple, Google kind of took a shot at them, which I meant to go back and listen to the song and I still have it. You listen to it?
No.
What's it called? Texco Greens or something?
Yeah.
So Drake?
Yeah.
Drake, right? Drake dropped a new album.
I
don't know anything about it.
There's a song called Texco Green, and it was a reference to green bubbles on iPhones.
Oh, okay. See, that so was lost on me. Anyways, Google had tweeted, or Android had tweeted, about them really digging this new song from Drake. And it just kind of turned into a little mudsling about the fact that Apple needs to embrace RCS.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty good dig, honestly. And I don't think they're doing anything malicious or anything like that, but I think Google's doing a good job of keeping this at the forefront of the tech industry, because Apple does need to do, and like it was said in the tweet or the article that I read or whatever, it was somebody from Google, wasn't it? They said this is in Google's hands to fix this, or Apple's hands. It's it's in their court. They're the ones that have to fix
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
it almost feels at this point that Apple's not doing it just out of spite. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
They would never do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I don't really understand what the reason for the holdout would be. You know, it's no different than at one point they decided with iMessage they needed to add MMS and SMS support. Like, that's how most people communicate. We can't sell a phone without that. That seems silly,
right?
And so RCS is the replacement for SMS MMS. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and it's not like this is some outlier that it's like, oh well, you know, some people. When Google saw that carriers weren't embracing it the way that they wanted them to, they just usurped them.
Right.
They ran it off their own servers, and Google, and it's not Google trying to force their play. They're not trying to dominate this. It's just a superior technology, and they want people to take advantage of that. I love it. I love RCS on my phone.
It's when you hook up with somebody that's using it, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, it works.
It's absolutely awesome.
And
I can't imagine that there's any type of technical deficiency that's causing Apple to not do this,
because RCS has been around way too long for that to be the case.
I mean, you're an insider. What's going on?
I mean, I turn myself down. Turn off.
Were you over there grumbling?
No, we're just a stewing. Stubborn group of people.
Okay,
that's
fair
all
enough.
It is.
That's all it is. You heard it here first, folks. Apple just don't want to.
Well, and here's the. This is the last thing I'll say, because I've ranted about this before. With RCS on in iMessage, make it an orange bubble or something, you know. So, like, if you need to differentiate, if you feel the need as Apple to be like, hey, this isn't an iMessage, to a point, I can get them needing to point out that those two are different things. Like, if I'm in Facebook, because Facebook Messenger handles text messaging, if I'm in Facebook Messenger, I kind of would like to know whether I'm texting someone or using an IM. I'd like to know the difference. It's not as necessary with RCS, because RCS can handle almost all the same stuff.
Right.
So maybe it's not necessary, but if you still feel it's necessary and you want to keep your lock-in stuff and, you know, let kids get bullied over all of it, and if that's high on your priority list as a manufacturer of things, Apple, go ahead. Keep doing that.
Right.
But just change the color and adopt the standard so that it's less of an imposition on Apple users when an Android user gets in their text messaging
thing. My question is, at the end of the day, What does it matter? You cannot tell me that there's any reason other than Apple just wants to have their thing that's their own. There's no advantage to me knowing or having a blue bubble or a green bubble, is there? I know at one point in time there probably was, because there were certain things, you know, like there was a point in time where, especially around here, where I could not get images from people using iPhone.
You still can't. I mean, you can, it's but they're weird, they're terrible. You know, but it's SMS and MMS as a protocol is the problem.
Right.
And so if I send you a text message, you have an iPhone, the only text message option most people are going to use is iMessage.
Right.
Well, iMessage is an instant messenger by default. It handles text messaging.
Right.
It's not a text message client. So when I send that to you, the different color bubble was originally just meant to alert iPhone users, hey, this is somebody messaging you with text messaging. Don't expect things like read receipts. Don't expect things like large videos to go back and forth. Like, don't expect an IM experience with this text
message.
All
the things that RCS solves.
Correct. And so, you know, there are probably some things with iMessage. Like, I know they do the little emoji or the little moving emoji things. I can't think of emojis? Yeah. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that iMessage is doing when it comes to peer-to-peer connection that RCS doesn't do. So I don't know why there would be any need. But because it's created the stigma that it has, Apple uses it for tie-in 100%. Yeah. Like, they use it for lock-in, ecosystem lock-in, because you can go on Twitter right now, I guarantee you, and run a search for iMessage Android and see hundreds of people tweeting that they would think about leaving iOS to go and try out Android if it weren't for iMessage, because they have so many family members that use iMessage and they have these groups and these text chat groups.
But why?
Because that's where it is now.
Right.
And so now they don't want to leave because they don't want to be the green bubble that busts up their ability to like and thumb up and send group text. And I get it. Like, I get that.
I have an article on how to put iMessage on a non-iOS device.
Without having to buy a host Mac. It's not really a thing. And I mean, so I understand the people that don't want to get away from it. What I don't understand is the fact that there's a way to get rid of this stigma now.
And they won't.
And they're not going to do it. But then part of me can kind of understand that they're just like, hey, this is a tie-in. We have shackles on people. We're going to keep them on them. And it's going to be a tough one. Like, until RCS is the absolute de facto standard for messaging on other phones, I don't think they will do it.
Because
it's still not.
Yeah, I used to kind of not defend Apple, but kind of give them a pass, because I thought, well, Google does the same thing. You've got Pixel exclusive features, but that's not the same. That is not, you know, having the what's playing on my lock screen is not the same as disrupting the interaction between millions of phone users, because that's what you're doing. You're hurting the market. You're not, I mean, everyone has their own exclusive features, but those exclusive features are exclusive to a device or an individual. They're not limiting the functionality of everyone involved. Me buying a new Pixel 6 Pro doesn't affect Andrew's phone usage.
When did RCS come out?
Whew.
Like 2016?
No, like 2011, I think.
Oh,
a standard, it's been available. It just has not been adopted.
Okay, right. So around the same time as iMessage then.
Yeah, shortly thereafter, yeah.
Okay.
But no one was using it.
Sure. And to me, that's the biggest reason to use the iMessage over regular text message back then. And
oh, 100%.
Then I've become so accustomed to it.
Right.
I would absolutely love them to have RCS, because then I wouldn't have that green bubble issue. But I think most users would be fine with it if they were offered it, but Apple just won't do it. I mean, you look at like 5G. It took them years to add 5G to their phones.
Yeah. And I think too, like, if Apple comes up with some sort of iMessage thing that RCS can't do, then they retain the ability to say, hey, we still have lock-in with this. We don't want people, you know, you don't want to leave an iPhone because you won't be able to have iMessage, and iMessage does this thing that all these other texting whatever can't do. I think at that point they would probably be more willing to put RCS in there, because now it's not about read receipts. It's not about being able to send videos and photos. It's this other feature that you can't do if you don't have iMessage.
Right.
And I thought, I feel like maybe like the whole Animoji thing was an attempt at that sort of thing. Like, let's create a different type of lock-in that doesn't have to do with protocols and communication.
The messaging standards. Functionality itself.
Right. Yeah. And so I try to tell people this all the time. Like, if you want a better analogy, like sometimes it gets difficult because we're talking about text messaging as a standard versus instant messaging as a service that other people do. Like Google had Allo, Google had Hangouts. There's WhatsApp, there's Facebook Messenger, there's countless instant messengers. And so the defense for this is, well, you know, iMessage is just a very popular instant messenger in the United States, and you shouldn't get so butthurt about, you know, this not working on your device. And so if that was all it was, then it's like, okay, maybe that's true. And if they don't adapt to the latest whatever text messaging thing, like, we can step back and have a whole discussion about, well, you know, should text messaging, texting be the thing that it is? Like, it's not like the old days where everyone has, you know, half the people have flip phones.
Right.
And SMS is the only way they can send a text-driven message. It's just not true anymore. Most people have a smartphone, so you're choosing what instant messenger you want to use.
And right.
I don't text people if I don't have to anymore. Like, I just don't. And so hopefully they're on WhatsApp or they're somewhere else, and I've got these circles of people, and I know where to connect with them. But if we take a step back and you take a different protocol, so take email, for instance. So say Apple created in Apple Mail a different, like, more advanced, like, they figured out some way to take their email that runs through their servers, and for Apple and Mac users, I don't know what it would be. It does other things, like it has these integrations like Slack and stuff, and it's really great and really awesome. And then they decided, you know, email's for schmucks. We don't like it anymore. And so now you've got millions of people using Apple Mail, and they're like, we're just going to get rid of that because it's old. And it is. Email's right. Outdated.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
Absolutely.
And they decided, you know what? We're going to get rid of it. Meanwhile, the rest of the world goes, hey, we've got email 2.0, you know, and now it's email 2.0 has solved all the protocol issues of old email. And everybody's like, oh, thank God. You know, I can use my Gmail, or I can use Outlook, or I can use whatever emails on my server, I can use it, and it's going to do stuff better. Like, I can see real-time read receipts, or I don't know, whatever. And then Apple goes, yeah, we're not updating our thing, though. So yeah. We have all these people locked in to use an Apple Mail, and they're just going to keep sending those, and they're going to get some really obnoxious way of seeing old emails.
Right.
Even though there's a replacement. Like, when you take it out of the text messaging thing and hear it that way, it's like, that's absolutely ridiculous. They would never do that. That's exactly what
they
doing.
Built. Yeah.
You know, that's what's happening with this. And so it's an unfortunate thing. It's frustrating as an Android user. It's frustrating. It would be frustrating to me if I was an iPhone user. Like, I just heard Andrew say, like,
I would totally use it.
I would use it. Like, I don't care. Like, that's not really, you're not going to leave. The minute an RCS chat doesn't turn a bubble green, you're not going to be like, I'm out. I've been waiting for a reason to leave iOS, and this is it. This is the.
But I know plenty of people who
are hanging on because of that.
The moment you mention why you use an iPhone, and like, well, your Android phone doesn't have this. I'm like, well, we do. We just have a universal version of
right.
it, not, you know.
And there's so many other things I feel like that Apple's got ecosystem lock in on. And I'm like, yeah. This isn't one to hold on to anymore. Let's let this one go and move on. But
yeah. So
whether they ever will is who knows, honestly.
All right. You want to talk about your Dragonfly a little bit?
We'll do a hot take.
Yeah, let's do a hot. Yeah, we haven't done a hot take in weeks. So
hot
yeah,
take.
I'm sure if you're around the when did we get it? We got it last Friday. So
yeah.
We had already podcast, but we've done some content around it, multiple content pieces around it over the past week. So we do have the what is supposed to be the retail version of the HP
yeah.
Elite Dragonfly
Chromebook.
That's it. Just Chromebook. Yep. There's no C10.
I've just been calling it the Dragonfly.
Yeah, it's the Dragonfly.
That's what it is. It's better than it was back in January when it was super duper pre-production. Mm-hmm. Haptic trackpad, very cool. Works like you'd expect it to. Multiple levels of pressure there. Backlit keys, fingerprint scanner. Great port selection. Full size HDMI, USB Type-C on both sides. Quad HD screen, 400 nits. great looking front facing camera.
Gorgeous machine.
Yeah, and it's really pretty. It's really nice to look at.
Are the haptic settings in the settings menu? Mm-hmm. They are.
Yep. So all you have is haptics on or off, and three levels of pressure, which I figured out eventually was the pressure it takes pushing downward to register the click.
The hit. Okay.
Like, I like it just very light. So I have it on light.
So I've had those flags enabled forever, but I don't have a haptic heat trackpad, so they've never shown.
And there is this light little haptic feedback whenever you switch desks. There's a little bump.
Like a little oops.
And then if you get to the end, it's a little bit more of a jarring bump. Nice little touch there. Pen attaches magnetically on the side, like you'd expect. It charges the way that it did before. Everything's there. It's really good. We have a call with HP here in just a little bit to talk some more specifics. And hopefully, I'll be able to share in the next couple of days about like retail availability, pricing, and all that kind of stuff. Because obviously, on HP's website, it's astronomical. Yeah. People are still kind of freaking out about that. But I've had some hiccups with it so far. The other day, I had to remove Android apps and put them back because it was. Even after restart, it was just like destroying my RAM. Like everything on every page was reloading constantly. I turned off the Play Store and it immediately fixed. I have turned it back on since then and it's been fine. So
yeah, all the stuff that's happened really makes it feel like this might just be a lemon, especially the stuff that happened today. It feels like maybe there's a hardware thing going on EC or something.
But. Yeah, I went through a couple different docks and it was just sometimes it'd work and then it wouldn't work. And then I plug it in the other one and it whatever. But then today it was showing it was charging. So I unplugged it because it said it was like a 30%. I'm like, that's weird. So I unplugged it. And it still said it was charging. Plugged the charger back in and didn't register anything. So I restarted it. It started up with the charging icon on the battery. I'm like, that's not good. And so I'm trying both ports, trying multiple chargers. And all these chargers, obviously, checking on other Chromebooks, it worked fine.
It's a self-charging Chromebook. They didn't announce that.
It just sits there and charges itself.
Solar.
I power washed it because I'm like, well, this isn't working. It started up from a power wash showing that it was charging and it was sitting in my hand.
Unplugged in.
Like, that's not good. So when it dies, it's probably going to be dead.
Yeah.
I might have a lemon. Obviously going to bring some of that up in the call.
Yeah. Please do not let that form any opinions about this device.
No,
it wouldn't be the first time we got a review unit in that was defective or faulty.
It's part of it. But apart from those weird oddities, and I think I chalk some of that up to 12th gen Alder Lake stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this is a new generation of processor. This just happens to be the first one that's not anything else that's happened weird with a 12th gen device we've had. You chalk it up to, pre-production.
Yeah, because I'm using the Lenovo right now, and it's got some quirks, but it's way pre-production. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And so this one isn't, and it's kind of, in some ways, behaving like a pre-production unit. So HP will get us a different one over for the review, obviously. But we got some questions to ask, mainly about retail availability. Like, is it going to be at Best Buy? Is it going to show up at other retailers? And what models and what kind of prices?
Yeah, so hopefully after that call today, we'll have some answers that we can share out, because it would be awesome to see this device. When July or August?
Availability?
Yeah.
They said June originally.
Yeah, because if you try to pre-order one or order one on HP, some of them say like October or so. But hopefully, you guys will be able to walk into a Best Buy. And
it is going to be in other retailers. I did confirm that with Alex a few weeks back, because I was like, these prices are crazy. Like, can you say anything? He was like, I can't. There's certain things I can't say yet. He's like, but there are massive price cuts that come to retailers basically for them to resell. So those prices will come down at retail outlets.
And as much as I'd love to say, you're going to be able to go buy one of these for $700, you're not. These aren't going to be, this isn't going to be a device, but it's going to be a $1,000 device that's worth every penny of $1,000.
Yeah. I mean, you get rid of the couple little quirks that have been kind of strange. And to be fair, if it's not technically out on the market yet, like even if they're not shipping, Chrome OS 103 could have already addressed all the stuff.
Because it's still on 101 unless that's changed.
It's 102.
Is it 102?
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, they could have addressed all these things in 103 already, knowing that it was going to roll out before these things actually hit shelves. So that's going to be some questions I'm going to ask during our time today. And so hopefully we have some more information on that. But so far, it is an impressive Chromebook.
Very much sure. So. Yep. So there you go. There's our not so hot take on the HP
warm take.
Dragonfly, our lukewarm tepid take. So that's about it for this episode, guys. We will have young Joe back with us next week. So if you missed him, come join us next week. If you didn't miss him,
sorry, he's going
to
be back.
We'll see if Andrew can edit an episode without him in it. I don't know what to tell you. So there you go, guys. Thanks for listening and tune in next time. We'll see you later.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunbox.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.